Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's August 7th. Currently, we've got 67 degrees in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 68 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Hopefully your Wednesday is off to a great start, the same as our listeners out there as well. We're looking at some decent weather today. We're going to have mostly sunny skies, but we've got a couple of things to talk about. The first thing is we are under a red flag warning, and that'll be in effect from noon today through 9 o'clock this evening. And that's basically because we're going to see the winds picking up out of the north and west, 10 to 20 miles per hour with gusts at times up to 30. And then we're also going to have this very low humidity that's going to develop this afternoon. So very dry air, and we've got the dry fuel, which is all the grass, the rubbery and shrubberies and all that stuff out there that can catch fire easily. And if that occurs, any fires that start can spread quickly. So that's what a red flag warning means. It means that critical fire weather conditions are imminent or possible. So just kind of keep that in mind and be very safe and cautious if you're going to be out and about throughout the day. Otherwise, we're going to be looking at that mostly sunny sky, but we're also going to see some smoke and haze coming in from the north and west later today. I'm actually tracking a thick plume of smoke coming in from some of those wildfires that's been pushed to our north. That smoke is going to come back to the south, and that will arrive here across northern Utah as we go into this afternoon and evening. Now, that's going to make for some bad air quality. We've got a code orange in effect for that, unhealthy for sensitive groups, but it will make for some vivid and nice sunset. So if you have a camera, go ahead on and go outside this evening, snap a picture of that sunset, because it's likely to look fairly nice out there with, again, that smoke and haze in the area. Otherwise, going throughout the rest of this week, we're going to be partly cloudy as we go into your Thursday. By Friday, we may start to introduce an isolated storm or two, but better chances of pop-up scattered showers and storms will arrive over the weekend. And, of course, that signals a big pattern change, because high temperatures today, we're talking around Park City and the higher elevations in the upper 80s and lower 90s. In the Heber Valley, we're talking temperatures climbing into the upper 90s again today. But as we go throughout the week, those upper 90s and upper 80s to low 90s in the mountains will turn into storm activity. So no complete washout this weekend, but we will have a chance of scattered showers and storms and somewhat cooler temperatures finally as we get towards the weekend. So Leslie, looking pretty good overall, but we got to get through some smoke and haze and that critical fire danger later today.
Okay, Cedric, thanks. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation CEO Colin Hilton. He'll be calling in from Paris. He'll have an update on what he's learned there and what needs to happen here before the 2034 games return. National Ability Center Development Director Caitlin Bognowski with details on this year's Summit Challenge and how you can participate. And finally, Helen Nadel, Executive Director of Summit Community Gardens and Eats with a Garden update. Then stay tuned for the Mountain Life. Today's guests include Dr. Boris Heifetz, a neuroanesthesiologist at Stanford Medical School. He discusses the use of psychedelics and the placebo effect in his recent article in Scientific American titled, "Is a Drug Even Needed to Induce a Psychedelic Experience?" Then local author Dick Geary talks about his new book, Just Another Dick, the presumptuous memoir of a truly unimportant person. It's a riotous story of a man who rose to respectability in an unconventional way. That's coming up on The Mountain Life. Of course, you can hear The Mountain Life every Wednesday between 9 and 10. And again, we had heard earlier this morning that the Montage had been evacuated due to fire concerns. We had heard that the fire was reported to be on the fourth floor elevator room, and it was isolated. We have contacted Park City Fire District, but have not had a response yet. We'll see if we can follow up on that when we have more of a new staff in here. Well, taking a look at some local news now, Wasatch County has a new tool available for taxpayers this year. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more about the county's efforts to simplify the appeals process.
Wasatch County has a new property value equity map available this tax season to add to taxpayers' toolkits. County Manager Dustin Graybaugh says it's an effort to give property owners more resources.
What we're trying to do is increase the level of transparency that people have onto the valuations that our assessor's office puts out. It's a tool that people can go on and look at what are properties individually valued at and how does that compare to properties around them.
for every residential property in the county, the new map provides information about its history, size, and value. Each property also links to notices breaking down how taxes have changed for each entity. Graybaugh says the information is meant to help taxpayers understand the range of factors that go into a property valuation.
People can identify the components that go into a property's value, which include the value of the land, as well as the value of the house. It's based on many variety of factors, including the age of the home and whether it's been updated and square footage and other features that affect the market rate.
That data can help property owners gather information on similar homes if they're appealing their valuation this fall.
This is just one attempt for us to be able to try and shed a little bit of light on that complex process.
Applications to appeal Wasatch County property valuations are due September 16th. Last year, the county heard about 2,000 appeals, and roughly 80% resulted in some change. For more information about property taxes in Wasatch County this year, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, the Paris Olympics continue through Sunday, and as we've reported, several Summit County residents attended at least part of the games to be there for the announcement of awarding Salt Lake City the 2034 Winter Olympic Games. One of those who has been in Paris is the CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton. He's calling me from Paris. Good morning, Hilton. Thanks so much. Well, I guess it's good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Leslie, and good morning.
Yeah, so when I first met you, you were working, I believe, for Park City Municipal there at about the turn of the century or so. Then you became, I believe, what, the lead planner for the 2002 Winter Games? Can you kind of give us a little bit of your history with the Olympics?
Sure. I actually came to Utah in 99 to work for the organizing committee and was head of the planning for the Park City Summit County area venues and was based at the Olympic Park during the games and then joined the city after the games for a four-year stint as the economic development director.
Ah, okay. So do we have that person that you were back in 1999 then, that Olympic, you know, that head of planning for the Olympics?
Not yet, because it's way too soon for those kind of hires. I was hired about 3 years out from the start of the games back then. And given that we're a full 9.5 years before a 2034 games, we've got some time before we start making those kind of hires.
Yeah. Okay. So you were in Paris, I'm guessing, for the announcement and then decided to stay and enjoy?
Yes, a combination here for the presentation and award, which was 2 weeks ago today. And then I, along with Callum Clark, have been two of our team from Utah, a part of what's called the Official Olympic Observer Program. So we're plugged in to sort of meet with the organizers of the 24 games, sort of the behind the scenes here and there stories of how they've both planned and are now executing against those plans. So we've been doing a program that has told us about everything from legacy and impact, which we got to meet with the team from Paris 2024, who is responsible for their legacy efforts. So obviously very interested to hear that. And then also on more detailed C3 programs, communication, command, control systems, their main operation center, kind of seeing how they're guiding what is just an amazing set of 35 competition venues, much larger in scale than a Winter Games.
Hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you've kind of seen the bowels of how all this has worked, but as sort of just an attendee of the games, what can you tell us what's worked and what hasn't for kind of on that side, because they probably have a little
Sure.
bit different problems. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say they're doing a fantastic job. It's obviously been several Olympic cycles that we didn't have issues like COVID, and being in a city like Paris, it's just amazing backdrops for their venues. Like most games, they went through a 3 to 4 day period of everybody on pins and needles and opening ceremonies, you know, and everybody worried that everything's going to go right. And after about 3 or 4 days, everything gets into a good flow. And that's exactly what happened here. And you know, there is still a large amount of police presence, if you will, on the streets. But, you know, they walk by their cars now. They're playing cards inside their vans, and they're all just smiling and happy. And that was very different than right at the beginning of the games.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I guess that's when you need to be most aware of what's happening. Speaking of the opening ceremonies, they were, I thought, fabulous on television. I did talk to somebody who watched them, and she had just kind of an odd location, maybe, but it wasn't so great. Not nearly as great, I think, as the television viewer.
You know, I think it did depend on the perspective. I was right in Trocadero, which was right where the finish of all of where the athletes were coming to, and it just obviously was torrential downpour. So I felt really sad for our friends here in Paris that had that, but it didn't deter the event. And I think folks, after getting soaked down for a while, many did kind of leave a little bit early, but it, for me, was a fantastic start to the games, despite the weather. And the next day it was sunny, and, you know, we had our delegation from Utah of just over 100 people. And, you know, we were at beach volleyball next to the Eiffel Tower and sunny skies the next day. So it just, you know, the events have been terrific, well attended, well run, and just an amazing atmosphere and energy of the city. And, you know, the movement needed this. So I'm very happy to see what's happening here.
Yeah, and certainly we've heard back home here the some of the challenges that Paris has had. Of course, the Seine River pollution issues. Here in Utah, though, we know that winter certainly has its own challenges. One, not enough snow, or two, too much snow. Hard to plan for.
And I think our, you know, Mother Nature always helps there, but I think, you know, with our resort partners and just our legacy foundation venues, you know, we've invested a lot in snowmaking systems. They're very high efficient systems, and, you know, we just get the cold temps. And so I think, given the stories of different locations around the world, I would say Utah is in a really good spot. And, you know, our friends at the IOC here have been so complimentary. I will always remember now their senior people right after our award saying, "I don't think we'll ever see as good of a bid as you guys delivered here." And that was high praise, and again, a testament to a state that has experience and good people that have rallied to do this very efficiently and effectively. And, you know, this level of public support is unheard of around the world, and people are amazed to hear that public support, and just love, you know, coming to Utah. And they're very familiar, because many of the athletes in the country's Olympic teams know our area from their national teams competing here on a regular basis. So I think people, as much as there was sort of that interesting dynamic on our award, the fact that the vote was something like 83-4 and 6 against still showed that the world can't wait to get back to Utah.
Yeah, certainly one of Salt Lake City's bid strengths has been the fact that we have all of the venues built. Still, what needs to happen at the facilities you manage to make sure that they are ready for 2034? And, of course, we're talking about Soldier Hollow in Wasatch County, the Utah Olympic Park here in Summit County then, and the Kearns Olympic Speed Skating Oval in Salt Lake County.
Yeah, so we earlier this year started a 10-year strategic plan update for our foundation. Our foundation's powers and purposes date back to 1994, when a vision of a legacy foundation was actually created and immemorialized at the state legislature. And that has been the foundation of our articles of incorporation and bylaws of our foundation for the past 25 years. And we felt it was time that we take an assessment of where we're at and where we want to go and what we want to look like as a legacy foundation in 2034 and beyond. And so we're starting with our employees, our most valuable asset, that being our staff at our three legacy venues. And we're beginning a process to get feedback from our employees. Then we'll be moving to our sport stakeholders, governing bodies like USB and snowboard and US Biathlon and speed skating and all of those partners, as well as our local clubs, whether it be Park City Ski and Snowboard or Romark or our speed skating clubs down at Yeovil and Team Soldier Hollow out in the Heber Valley. We're going to kind of get with our stakeholders and kind of hear their wishes of how we look and operate going forward. And then last but not certainly not least is our community partners, our local governments, our CVBs, our folks who have been so supportive of our efforts and want to be in alignment with those folks to sort of shape and reprioritize some key strategies and goals for us going forward. So that's on the Legacy Foundation. I think your next question, Leslie, would probably be, what about, you know, what's the big committee doing now? Well, the big committee, with my other hat, we will be ending the bid committee and moving into an organizing committee, or what the acronym is called, an OCOG. In 02, that was SLOC, the Salt Lake Organizing Committee. So there essentially will be a SLOC 2 that gets put together, reconstitute a new board, probably very similar to the bid committee. And right now, you know, the actions of that group is really right now to take a small break. Many of us are over here. We're going to take a little break and then do a debrief in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And as we've all had different takes on, you know, the last year or two and then through Paris here, we're going to begin very early planning steps with the organizing committee in the fall. But I think the key message is there's not going to be a ton that's done right away. And that's by design. There's really a strategy of not planning too fast, too quick, and not hiring a lot of people right away. So I think some might be surprised that, oh, you got to get going. But we're a full 3 years ahead of when a normal award is given. That used to be a 7 year out from a game period. So we've got a full 2.5 years prior to a traditional region starting to do these planning efforts.
So when you talk about legacy, I mean, Utah received some legacy money from IOC. What was that, about $76 million? Am I close there?
Yep, your number is spot on, Leslie.
Yeah.
That was the number, and we're planning on another $160 million infusion. $130 to $160 is the target to re-endow our foundation. And that is much needed because we still do not have a financial in perpetuity model. And a future games is absolutely necessary for us to be able to cover the operating subsidies and the capital upkeeps going forward.
Yeah, so that $76 million has been spent down to about what now?
$46 million today.
Yeah.
So a lot of people didn't even think we had any money. So the fact that we've got still $46 million in the bank, that is helping us to keep our facilities going. I would say the rest of the world looks at what we've done and are just amazed that, you know, we're busier today than we were right after 02. And we have these dynamic uses and are doing what the sport legacy was looking to do with these facilities when they were envisioned. And the fact that we can host the world again at them is a testament to a lot of great people collaborating and making legacy a real focus for Utah.
Yeah. So you've spent about $30 million just trying to maintain those venues. But you think about the 32-year difference between the 02 and the 34 games. I mean, aren't we starting to talk about like total replacements of the refrigeration at the track and things like that?
Done. Did it. We actually replaced that refrigeration system 3 years ago. So we have been doing the smart approach of when the life expectancy of the facility's equipment came to the end, we replaced them, and we got help. The state of Utah has been a huge partner in that effort, and they understood the value of doing it and not waiting until the facilities got broken down and in a total disrepair. It's much cheaper to do it as you go. And so that strategy has been employed. And while we have still upgrades that we need to do, we have to do some work on the Nordic jumps, and we have to put a new shade system for the bobsled track and more of a cover over the top of the track. So that there are things that we have to do, but they're all planned for and budgeted going forward. And again, I want to remind our listeners that we don't just run the facilities. We run programs at the facilities as well. And places like Soldier Hollow, we employ the coaches that teach cross-country skiing and teach biathlon. And so our approach to legacy is not just as facility operators, but it's program administrators. And that is an excellent approach for us, and one of the reasons I think we've been so successful.
Yeah, and certainly with climate change, we have seen the warming temperatures reporting the highest, July 22nd ever since temperatures have been recorded here in the state of Utah. But given that, what are the plans then for Soldier Hollow? I know you've got snowmaking there, but if temperatures aren't cold enough to make snow, is there a plan B for that Nordic area?
I don't think we need it, to be honest, Leslie. We have been able to make a base of snow by December, and it has lasted us into April for the last several years. Now, obviously, we've had some big snow years, but our snowmaking system will get the trails up and running. We'll end up creating snow storage on site. But at this point, in my opinion, we don't need a plan B for Soldier Hollow.
All right. And as you mentioned, with much of the maintenance work done and some of the operation services overhauled here, what will the focus then be, you think, for 2034? Some transportation solutions, getting people from, point A to point B?
Well, and that's, to me, the fun of what we get to see over the next 10-year period. For me, I'm pretty confident in our abilities to put on a great sporting event. From having this long lead time actually allows us to, in partnership, especially with our local governments, to be able to address some of the community benefit desires that different regions of the state have. And it's a real patchwork of different stories and different interests from different parts of the region. Heber Valley has a great, wonderful downtown redevelopment project that I've been working with their mayor and city manager. And we have ideas of how we connect our park and ride to Soldier Hollow, but closer to the downtown of Heber City. And that would allow a lot more energy, much like Park City had in '02, but also have that in Heber City. And I think everybody sees the value in that. And so they've got that as a key project. Obviously, Kimball Junction transportation is the number one issue for Summit County and for including Park City. And so how we address the problems for our everyday ski traffic problems and even some of the summer traffic issues, the games become a catalyst for these everyday problems to shoot for, to try to get the infrastructure project done in time to host the world. And we saw that in '02, it was done well, and we can do it again. And the key is having each of the local governments being able to identify not a list of 25 items, but ideally like 2 to 3 really big initiatives that the games can be a catalyst to. And that is the key going forward. And I know in speaking with our local government officials, you know, they're focused on trying to identify what those will be.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time. And I know that you have been able to see some events. I think you got to see Team USA men's basketball crush Brazil yesterday.
Yes. So I have my three boys over here. And so I've been working, but also getting out and showing the boys their first Olympics ever. So we kind of split up last night. Adam and I went to USA basketball, and my son Evan and Shane and Megan went to the 1500 meter finals at athletics. And so that was pretty special. And it was just, everybody is just in awe of seeing these amazing athletes and these amazing venues. And it's been really fun to show my family some of these areas as well.
Yeah. Any other event highlights that you've got to witness?
I would say the beach volleyball right next to the Eiffel Tower was just spectacular. We went to diving this morning, and that venue and the competition was wonderful. I went to the quarterfinal U.S. men's soccer against Morocco, and what an energy in the crowd, even though the U.S. lost that game. Just an amazing atmosphere in an amazing stadium that DSG plays within. And so just super fun and a lot to see. There's a big need for ticketing and hospitality services. So Callum and I did a lot to kind of understand sort of the new models of ticketing and hospitality revenues here. And that's a big element of our budget in the future. And so we had our eyes open to sort of the new norm of how that's working. And it's not dissimilar to what you see at a Jazz game, but there's a lot of things. We've got some good ideas now that we'll bring to our plans for a winter games in Utah.
Okay. Hey, Colin, thanks. I appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Les.
Okay.
Have a good day.
You too. That is the CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton, who has been in Paris for the last couple of weeks. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. We've got significant backup on northbound exit from Highway 40 to State Route 248. No reports of an incident. It sounds like we've got just cars and some construction perhaps happening there. Somebody complaining about just the signal timing on that earlier this week. But according to one of our listeners, a 10 to 15 minute delay. So if you can delay your travel, you may want to let those vehicles get through. Also, Park City Fire District Chief Bob Zanetti called in with some information. We appreciate that. So smoke was reported at the Montage this morning at about 7:15. It was isolated to the fourth floor. The cause of the fire was a burnt up elevator motor. Apparently no flames, so just smoking. It did affect about 5 to 10 people at the hotel who will need to relocate their rooms. Chief Zanetti gave praise to the Montage staff for how they handled the situation. They are still clearing out some of that smoke, but they do expect to be up and running again in the next hour or so. So no injuries, glad to hear that. The annual Summit Challenge to benefit the National Ability Center just around the corner. In the studio with details, I have the NAC's Development Director, Caitlin Bucknell. Good morning.
Good morning.
So when's the challenge?
August 24th.
Okay, and tell us what it is.
Yeah, so it's an 800-person road cycling ride. Typically about 100 of those riders are adaptive riders. So really cool event to be able to see so many different kinds of bikes and people all out riding together. It goes all through Summit and Wasatch County. There are 10 rest stops throughout because the routes range anywhere from 4 all the way up to 100 miles. And then we have a vendor village back at our ranch base out there in the Quinch Junction area. And we do encourage spectators just to come out and hang out as well. So even if you're not into riding, come out and cheer everybody on as they finish and enjoy the vendor village as well.
All right. So everyone welcome to participate?
Absolutely, yes. Everybody, all ages, all abilities. It is a really cool experience to stand at that start-finish line and just see so many different folks leave and come back, and the emotions at the finish line are pretty incredible.
Yeah, so 4 miles, you've got to be able to ride that because that's the minimum distance?
We do actually have a discovery loop, which is 1 mile right around the campus. But then all of the other ones, the options are 4 or 7 miles just for adaptive riders. And then the other routes that are open to anybody are 16, 25, 50, 80, or 100 miles. And that 100-mile route actually goes up through Wolf Creek Ranch. And so us and the Tour of Utah are actually the only two rides that get to go up there. So a pretty exclusive route. And that one is definitely very popular, but also extremely challenging.
Yeah, what do most people register for?
You know what, it's actually pretty spread out, which is great. It, you know, keeps it from ever getting too congested in any one area. The amount of riders per route is pretty spread out.
All right, so how do cyclists register if they're interested?
They can go to summitchallenge100.org. That is our event website, has all the information about the event, and then also links out to our registration site right from there. And registration is still open.
Okay, and until when?
Until the 22nd.
Okay. And then what's the cost to participate? Is it based on just the mileage?
It is, yes. So it's based on the route. All adaptive riders as well as their support riders do ride for free. Everybody else, it's based on the distance that they're riding. And it starts at $60 for that 16-mile route.
Okay. And then those from the NAC, I mean, what are some of the you know, the disabilities that they have that get out on a bike? I mean, do you have...
You will see everything, you know, visually impaired. So you'll see folks out on the tandem bikes. You'll see all kinds of different disabilities and different bikes, which, again, for folks that may not be as familiar with our adaptive bike fleet, that's a pretty cool thing to be able to come out and see all of that equipment. So, yeah, truly a ride for anybody.
Interesting. So you do have what, guides that lead the visually impaired?
Yes. So for those, a lot of times they'll ride an upright tandem bike, so front back. And so, you know, that way the visually impaired rider will ride behind the other rider. So it's a pretty cool experience to see the ways that no matter what you have, you can get out and ride with everybody else.
Yeah. So how much money do you hope to raise?
Our goal this year is $150,000. And so that's a combination of both our corporate sponsorships, registration fees, and then we do encourage folks if they want to and are willing to fundraise, whether they're signed up as an individual or as a team. And it's been pretty cool to see this year. A lot of the teams are really getting into it and having a fun time with the fundraising.
All right, so people can kind of go onto that website, see the teams, and then just make a donation to one of those teams if they know them?
Absolutely, yes. On the registration site, you can check out the leaderboard, both for the individuals and the teams.
All right, and then you don't have to ride.
You don't. Yes, exactly. There's truly something for everyone.
Yeah. How does this event and fundraiser then support the NAC and its Adaptive Nation there?
Yes. So all of the money raised does support our participants and our programs. You're probably familiar. We keep our program costs very, very low. But even still, sometimes folks need a little bit of financial support in order to be able to come and recreate with us. This past year, we gave out over $640,000 in scholarship money, and we are on pace to exceed $1 million. This year. And that's because we will not say no to anybody. So if somebody wants to come and recreate, we find a way no matter their disability. And so we certainly don't want cost to ever be a barrier.
Sure. I know it takes a huge force of people to pull this off. Yeah. So are you still looking for volunteers?
We are actually, yes. Our volunteer team is incredible. And luckily we live in a place where so many people are willing to volunteer, which is fantastic. But yes, we do still have a few volunteer positions available. If anyone is interested in that, they can just call over to the National Ability Center or email volunteer@discovernac.org. Because we use over 200 volunteers for this event. So to your point, we definitely could not make it happen without those folks.
Okay. So this starts pretty early, right?
It does, yes. It's an early morning. The 100-mile, I think, kicks off right at 7 a.m., and then we're staggered start from there. So yes, early morning, but then the vendor village will open up at 11 and go until 4 p.m.
All right. And people are... all back by then, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, they trickle in as the day goes on. But I will tell you, one of the most amazing parts of the day is cheering on that last rider to finish the finish line. Still a lot of folks on campus. Everybody is, you know, excited about their own challenge that they accomplished. And cheering on that last rider is always a pretty cool experience.
All right. And as you mentioned, there's, what, 10 stops along the way? And that would be for the 100-mile course?
So exactly,
about
yes.
About 10 miles?
Yeah. So there, yeah, the 10 different rest stops based on the route, but 10 total.
Okay. And then the 50-mile, how far does that go?
That goes out into, like, Peowa and Oakley. So that's the other thing. It is a beautiful, beautiful ride. So we're hoping for great weather, and we've been really lucky the last few years. But that 50-mile route is a pretty popular one as well.
Okay. Anything else you want people to know about this?
I think just like I said, in past years, I think a lot of folks didn't know that you could also just come out to spectate. So we are really excited to have a lot of folks on campus that day cheering everybody on. So, you know, obviously we'd love to have folks ride in the event or volunteer, but if they want to just come out and see campus and cheer everybody on, we would love to have them.
Okay. Again, to register or donate, summitchallenge100.org.
Yes.
All right, Caitlin, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Caitlin Bognowski is the Development Director for the National Ability Center. You're listening to the Local News Hour. Well, sheriff deputies have arrested a Wyoming woman on Interstate 80 in Summit County. She's accused of distributing fentanyl in Utah. KPCW's Parker Mellett, or excuse me, Connor Thomas has details.
The 34-year-old was heading east on I-80 late Sunday, August 4th, when a Summit County sheriff's deputy stopped her for traffic violations. He discovered an active warrant for her arrest in Evanston, Wyoming, for allegedly missing a court appearance and alleged probation violations. Then the deputy's canine detected drugs, and a search of the vehicle turned up 156 fentanyl pills. The deputy also found personal amounts of methamphetamine and LSD, as well as drug paraphernalia. She was booked into Summit County Jail and was being held without bond as of Tuesday. She had not yet been charged. A Utah court's records check also shows that at the time of her arrest, the Wyoming woman was out on bail on separate theft, drug possession, and distribution charges in West Valley City. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from Summit Community Gardens and Eats is Executive Director Helen Nadel. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
First off, I see fewer pot guts on the trails, and I'm guessing that's the same thing in the garden?
It sure is, and we are so happy to say goodbye to them. We talked to a lot of different farms in the region, you know, Copper Moose, Rustling Aspen, Casper Ripple Creations, Moonshadow. It was a year for pot guts. It was a year for other kinds of pests. And what we're seeing now, thankfully, is that the pot guts are on their way out. And, you know, the garden is looking absolutely beautiful. The hollyhocks, taller than I am. There is food, abundant food in just about every plot. It's that time in the garden where it's just beautiful.
So even though they've gone underground, I mean, do they still eat roots and stuff? I mean, are they damaging plants?
I would say that we have just seen, you know, over the last few weeks, there's been kind of incrementally less damage that I know Melissa Soltes, our incredible garden director, has seen in the demonstration beds where we're growing for the food pharmacy. We've also just heard fewer complaints. So anecdotally, you know, our plot runners seem to be having less issues with those now. And again, it's just, you know, the hummingbirds are buzzing around, flowers everywhere, and lots of food growing.
Great. You've got tickets for your Farm to Fork event going on sale today. What's this?
Yeah, so I'm thrilled to announce that we are ready to welcome guests to our Farm to Fork 2024 event. This is our big annual fundraiser every year. We're a small nonprofit, really rely on having a fabulous event for people to enjoy. We are thrilled to be up at the Pendry Pool Deck this year. Pendry Park City is our presenting sponsor. It's on the 12th of September. It's Thursday, 6 to 9. I don't know if you've been up there, Leslie. The views from the pool deck are truly stunning. And Pendry is hosting an incredible event with gorgeous food, wonderful cocktails, some of which are, we're going to have a signature cocktail with mint from the garden, and also the mojito with mint, another cocktail with some lavender simple syrup from the garden. So really happy to be providing that. And, you know, we're going to be highlighting just a few very special, unique food experiences at our live auction. We're really excited to, you know, have a great party and, you know, of course, raise some money for our wonderful organization while we're at it. The fact that Pendry is sponsoring us means that every dollar that we raise is going towards food pharmacy, towards edible education programming, towards all of the things that we, you know, commit to in the community that make an impact.
Okay. How much are you hoping to make?
We are hoping to make $20,000. Tickets for that are $175 right now, early bird, all the way through August. You can also buy some ticket bundles. We are just thrilled to be able to offer this opportunity. It's going to be a beautiful event. I will just mention there is a special guest star auctioneer making his very, very first debut at an auction, but somebody that I think many people in the community know and love.
Wade.
And that's Diego Zegarra.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He is donning his auctioneer hat for the first time to highlight our very special food experiences in the live auction.
Okay. People can get tickets then online?
Yeah. So at tickets are live right now, summitcommunitygardens.org. Please hop on there. Look for Farm to Fork 24. And we are excited to see everybody there.
Okay. And you have one final dinner in the garden?
The dinners in the garden this year have been really, truly wonderful and memorable. And I cannot thank Summit County Restaurant Raptax and the Chamber Sustainable Tourism enough for their support, as well as our community partners. Our final dinner is with Firewood on Main. Chef John Mirko is going to be providing a 5-course, really exquisite seasonal meal on September 22nd. Tickets are on sale for that now. You can do a wine pairing with that. It's going to be a really amazing event. And I do want to encourage people to come to that and also give a huge thank you to the community partners who have helped provide these just really beautiful dinners for us. Again, all the money raised goes to the food pharmacy, Wasatch Provisions, Alpine Distilling, Nosh Restaurant, Red Banjo, Auntie M's, and SD Pizzeria have all supported us, and we're just thrilled. We've heard great, great feedback. It's a ton of fun. So please come and join us for our last one in the garden.
Okay, you've made some improvements for the diners. What, putting up those shade structures has helped?
You know, the shade structures, and I'll just give a shout out to, again, to Summit County, this time the Recreation Reptex, that provided funding for us to put in 3 large sail shades under the sort of in the lawn area that was always an open space. This has been transformative in so many ways. I mean, as you mentioned, dinners in the garden, our diners now are treated to a great deal of shade, but it also makes a huge difference for our farm team. That is where they are weighing food for the food pharmacy, where they're washing food. There was not any other shade in the garden. And so to be able to have that for children at camps and for people who just want to come and picnic, I've been sharing the message that Summit Community Gardens and Eats, that garden space is county land that is open to everybody. So if you would like to come, take a walk through, take a stroll, have a picnic, that shade space provides a really lovely spot to just, while you're driving on 224, just hop on by and enjoy the view.
Okay, this is the last week of summer camp?
Yeah, the last week of summer camp. It has been an incredibly fun and vibrant time. I mean, Leslie, I know you're usually here in the morning, but when you go into the garden, from 9 to 3, we've had 22 children every day. We've had pre-K in the mornings. It's been a really just a sweet experience for so many children. It's pretty magical to be in a space where so much food is being grown. Kids are making fairy houses. They're searching for gnomes. They're seeing that garden ecosystem with the deer kill eggs, the hummingbirds. We've had a bunch of visitors in the garden this season. And it's just been lovely. After school in the garden is right around the corner. All of our school-based programs start up the second week of September. So again, last year, 1,800 children, unique children, were part of our school year programs. I'm really thrilled to get those up and off the ground. Our After School in the Garden is a really wonderful fall time for kids who love to be outdoors, who are really interested in gardening, all the food that kids planted in the summer during our camps. It's now ready to harvest. And so kids in the after school program will be tending the gardens, they'll be harvesting, and they'll be cooking with that awesome, delicious food. We've still got tons growing. It is harvest time right now.
Okay, so people can sign up then for those after school programs?
After school in the garden. And I'm going to also just mention, it is incredibly flexible. So if your child just wants to try it out, one-time drop-in, you can do that. If you'd rather have a regular sort of Monday, Wednesday, or Friday experience for your child, you can do that. You can do an 8-class drop-in. So there's lots of flexible ways for your kid to enjoy the garden and for, all fall long.
Okay, and you also have some upcoming education programs. Tell us about those.
You know, I think the one that I am, I'm really excited about all of them. I will say that for the naturalists out there, we've got some amazing things happening. In just 1 week, we have Eagle in the Garden. Hawkwatch International is coming up from Salt Lake with a golden eagle. And we are going to be learning all about raptors. We are going to be exploring their role in the ecosystem, their importance, and also just seeing this magnificent, majestic bird. And it's, yeah, that is next Wednesday. It's at 6 o'clock. You can go on the website and purchase tickets for that. We've got some family packages because I think that's one that really the entire family might enjoy. And then we've also got Root Revival, really an incredible company in our community who tends our bees. They do a lot of other work helping people garden in their own homes, but they are tending our bees. We have lots of honey every year from Summit Community Gardens. They are coming to do a program about all things bees on 8/28, so on August 28th, another Wednesday. And that's gonna be really fun. That's limited to 10 people because we do have, you know, everybody suits up in bee suits for that one. But you can find out more about that class. We've also got a wonderful cooking class with Miss Brighty, one of our educators, who's a, you know, big favorite doing Curious Cooks. She's doing a charcuterie board class. Again, fun for kids and adults. All that information is on our website.
Okay, and you also wanted to note that the garden will be participating in Park City's Humanitarian Day of Service on September 14th. So what will happen then?
Yeah, that's right. So Park City Humanitarians is organizing Serve Park City, which is a Summit countywide event. I know you've had Karen Marriott on to talk about that. It's, you know, a day of service. It's also a day of remembrance for 9/11. Like many other nonprofits in the community, we are hosting a group. We are going to be doing classic weeding and mulching, which is I just want to put a shout out there for weeding and mulching. It's lots of fun. We're also maybe laying some new ground cover under that shade structure area that we had talked about. So some good opportunities to get involved with us if you want to be outdoors, but also just putting a plug in for going to justserve.org, you can find out about the many, many different service projects there. You know, in addition to that opportunity on the 14th, I will say there are so many opportunities to volunteer in the garden every week. Whether you want to deliver food that's just been harvested from the garden for a food pharmacy, or you want to help tend the garden beds there with Melissa Soltes, our amazing garden director, if you want to weed and mulch. But also we have some need for school-based helpers to do some help with Curious Cooks, also to deliver boxes of fruit for our Fruit to Schools program to make sure all children have healthy snacks. Jump on our website under volunteer. Lots of opportunities every day, every week, as well as that special opportunity on the 14th.
Okay, and again, for the 14th, that's justserve.org.
Justserve.org.
All right.
That's correct.
Thanks, Helen. Anything else?
You know, one thing I just want to mention, I heard from Liz Cohen at USU Extension that the Summit County Fair is accepting vegetables. If anybody would like to bring their vegetables to be judged and maybe win a fabulous prize, you can bring your fabulous vegetables to the Legis Center in Colville from 8 to 10 tomorrow morning. That's Thursday morning. And, you know, see if the Summit County Fair will give you a prize.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Helen Adel is the Executive Director of Summit Community Gardens and Eats. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, state property rights lawyers have issued an opinion regarding a Park City resident's challenge of local land use decisions. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
The Utah Property Rights Ombudsman issues opinions as a means of resolving land use disputes statewide. Park City resident Bob Theobald recently asked the ombudsman to investigate his neighbors, who he claims are violating local development rules by building in sensitive wetlands near McLeod Creek. This year, Theobald unsuccessfully appealed a Park City Planning Commission decision that allows his neighbors, the Carahers, to shift the building pad on their Park Meadows property. A building pad is the area where structures like a home or shed can be built. Theobald is suing Park City government and his neighbors Sarah and Jerry Hall, who belong in the same HOA as the Carahers. Sarah Hall is the chair of the Park City Planning Commission. Theobald accuses the Halls and the Carahers of deleting covenants, conditions, and restrictions, or CCNRs, that govern the wetlands on their properties. CCNRs are private agreements among landowners, but in this case, Theobald claims they are tied to the original conditions of approval for the neighborhood and therefore law. The state property rights ombudsman found that Theobald lacks standing to challenge the Planning Commission decision under state law. The ombudsman also rejected Theobald's claim that the decision would create a dangerous precedent for future land use decisions in the neighborhood. The report says Theobald could appeal future approvals if he can prove his property suffers from specific injury, which means the effect on his property is different than the general public. In a statement, Park City Municipal applauded the advisory opinion, saying it is consistent with the city's briefing and a pending motion in the 3rd District case against Theobald. Theobald declined to comment Tuesday, saying he was working on replying to the city's motion to dismiss in court. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.